Today on Common Ground Radio, we're celebrating Black History Month and revisiting a conversation from 2023 discussing Black Earth Wisdom, Soulful Conversations with Black Environmentalists, a book of essays and interviews that explores Black people's scientific and spiritual connection to the land, waters, and climate. I'm Holly Cederholm, your host for a conversation about local food and organic agriculture brought to you by the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association on Community Radio WERU 89.9 FM Blue Hill. The following interview was recorded in 2023. I'm joined by Leah Penniman, a Black Creole farmer, mother, soil nerd, author, and food justice activist who co-founded Soul Fire Farm in Grafton, New York in 2010, with the mission to end racism in the food system and reclaim our ancestral connection to land. Leah is part of a team that facilitates powerful food sovereignty programs, including farmer training for Black and Brown people, a subsidized farm food distribution program for communities living under food apartheid, and domestic and international organizing toward equity in the food system. In addition to Black Earth Wisdom, she is the author of Farming While Black. Leah, welcome to Common Ground Radio.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm also joined by Rue Mapp, who documents her personal experiences while pioneering and shifting a new visual representation of Black people in the outdoors. An outdoors woman, she transformed her kitchen table blog into a national nature-inspired enterprise and movement called Outdoor Afro, where Black people and nature meet. Rue is the founder and CEO of Outdoor Afro, and she is also the author of Nature Swagger, Stories and Visions of Black Joy in the Outdoors, which was published in 2022. Her words about nature and Black joy can also be found in conversation with other Black environmentalists in Black Earth Wisdom. Rue, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I wanted to start by taking a cue from another book, Rue's book called Nature Swagger. The book celebrates the experiences of Black people in the outdoors. And Rue, you describe a practice that you use as a leader with Outdoor Afro. In your opening circle for new groups, you ask participants to share something they love doing in nature. I thought we'd start with this grounding exercise.
Well, first of all, I love that question, to ground community and to really start in an asset-based mindset about what we have, what we love, right? And for me, I love the water, like anything involving water. I don't care if it's lakes or rivers or oceans, being out in it, being in proximity to it. I'm just a big fan of any and everything that puts me close to water.
What about you, Leah?
I have to pick just one thing I love to do in nature. I'm like, what don't I love to do in nature? Sleep, hike, camp, kayak. I mean, I'm a farmer. I've been a farmer for, oh my goodness, over 27 years now. It's spring here, so it's the beginning of farming season. Yesterday, we were out just in the muck. I mean, we were pulling tarps. We were, you know, spreading limestone, moving hay bales. And for a lot of folks, that's grueling, even menial. But for me, there is something about just being under the wide open sky, like, engaging with the force of my own body in relationship to the earth that is so deeply satisfying. Like, it's the kind of tired at the end of the day that is an earned kind of tired. And it makes me feel very alive. So there are a few things that I don't like to do with nature.
Well, Black Earth Wisdom opens with a section called These Roots Run Deep, which honors the contributions of Black people to environmental thought and presents a counter narrative to the popular storyline of a modern environmental movement beginning with and revolving around the efforts of white people. And the book points to a legacy of environmental destruction entwined with white supremacist ideology. I wanted to jump into the discussion of Black Earth Wisdom specifically by asking if you wanted to introduce anyone that is important to a conversation about the book, knowing, much like Leah, your response to everything about nature, you might not be able to fit every person into the space of this conversation, but I wanted to hold that space for it.
So yeah, it is our practice at Soul Fire and more broadly in the Black community to honor our ancestors when we begin conversations. And so in a similar way, Black Earth Wisdom, as you noted, does open with a lengthy chapter paying homage to many of the people who've come before us in the Black community who remember the beautiful skill of how to listen to the earth and remember that we are the younger siblings of creation. We owe everything to our elders, to the hawks, the mountains, the rivers, the moss, the trees. And, you know, among those ancestors, we can certainly uplift Dr. George Washington Carver, I think, first and foremost. He's our patron saint of agriculture. He's one of the founders of the modern organic movement, two generations before the Rodale Institute came on the scene. Thousands of inventions which he refused to patent because he believed in the commons. And when he was asked, you know, where do you get all of these ideas? He was considered one of the 10 greatest minds in history by Albert Einstein. And so when asked, where do you get these ideas? He said, I go into the forest in the pre-dawn hours and I listen to the voice of God through nature. He said, nature is God's unlimited broadcasting station through which he speaks to me every minute, every hour, every day, if we just listen, if we just tune into the right channel. And so he, like so many other earth listeners, you know, Wangari Maathai plants over 51 million trees, right, in East Africa. John Edmondson, who taught taxidermy and ornithology to Charles Darwin. Charles Henry Turner, who was the first scientist to prove that insects are intelligent. You know, on and on. There are so many Black people throughout time who have had a deep spiritual and scientific relationship with the earth that's often just overlooked, paved over by white environmental sensibilities that also very tragically ignore the fact that it's the very same colonizing mentality that caused the environmental problems in the first place. So my hope in uplifting both these ancestors as well as contemporary voices in Black environmental space is to start to heal and correct the mistakes of that history.
When I was reading your book, Leah, that was what really touched me, what you've described as our ancestral practice to remember from whom we come. Because I say all the time, I'm like, I didn't invent Black people getting outside. Like, this is not new. And, you know, it's about a retelling of our history that helps people have a more powerful connection. Like, I wasn't raised on the legacy of John Muir or Rachel Carson. And you know, we give all of the contributors their due. But when I think about the ordinary people, my father, people that, you know, maybe didn't have a chance to have a book that they were able to write and share the story, that they too have a solid and important contribution to this conversation. And so I really appreciate you, Leah, for making this so crystal clear. And I just felt the ancestors just leaping off the page in joy for being seen and being called by name. And I hope that that's something that we continue to do throughout our work and continue to model for others to do.
One person that's named in both Nature Swagger and Black Earth Wisdom is Harriet Tubman. Rue, you call Harriet Tubman a true wilderness leader and speak about her as journeying Black people to freedom through nature. And this was a reframing for me, I'll be honest. When I think of Harriet Tubman, she's encapsulated in the narrative of slavery, and that is an important piece of it. But I felt like it was shifting the tone and the narrative of environmentalism that I've encountered.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we typecast people in our history, right? And so oftentimes we're typecast in association with pain and peril narratives. And the thing about, you know, Harriet Tubman, to me, I think about all the things she had to know, all the things that she had to just be completely solid and confident in the natural world in order to navigate people safely, to know what to eat, to know what we can use to heal ourselves. There's so many skills that go into being in the outdoors. And you think about traveling in the cover of night. Like, we're talking about people who didn't have a GPS system and keen shoes and all of the tools that we rely so heavily on today. Like, that knowledge was baked into her DNA and was a part of an active practice of expedition to move people covertly into their freedom. And so I just use that as a metaphor always in the work that I get to do, I'm so privileged to do. And also, Leah, I mean, we are helping to navigate through our work, our community, harnessing and totally enveloping ourselves in the power of nature so that people can attain a freedom. And sometimes it's literal. Like sometimes people need to be emotionally free. Some people need freedom through their food ways. They need freedom from all the things that ail us sometimes in day-to-day life. And so it was important to me to really recognize in the same way that I recognize people in my family who may not be recognized or viewed as an environmental leader, that they too have a very, and it's not casual, it is literal. They had a very important way of harnessing nature so that we can live the most fully expressed and free selves possible.
That's so powerful. I mean, Rue, you're someone who's really opened my eyes to this as well, the ways we need to step out of the pain and peril narrative and be just holding each other in the light, whether history uplifts us or not, or whether, you know, there's a book for it or not. And the way that you lead people, you know, quite literally walking towards freedom and all of those aspects of freedom is something that struck me as such an important carrying on of the legacy of Harriet Tubman when we spoke. The one thing I'll add about Harriet Tubman herself is something that I learned in researching for Black Earth Wisdom, is that her lifelong yearning was to be an orchardist. She had to take care of other people's trees. She wasn't allowed to eat the fruit of the trees. And to her, one of the symbols of freedom was going to be to have her own orchard. So when she arrived in upstate New York, not too far from where we are, one of the first things she did was to plant apple trees and plant an apple orchard. And as someone who's also a farmer and orchardist, a tree lover, that's resonated with me so, so deeply, in part because when in 1865, at the end of the Civil War, when the freedmen started organizing for what Reconstruction needed to look like, there was a letter written by the people of Falls Church, Virginia, that said, what we need is our homes and the ground beneath them so that we can plant fruit trees, concerning which we can say to our children, these are yours. So this idea of like land and trees as being part of the symbol of our autonomy, our freedom, you know, our ability to self-determine, resonated with Harriet Tubman, and it resonates with me and with my community up to this day. So yeah, she was truly connected to the land in so many ways.
Thank you for sharing that. Leah, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit for folks who haven't read the book yet about how it's organized and your process for writing it and maybe co-creating it, because you're not the only voice that shows up. As we've already talked about, there are lots of voices that appear in its pages.
Yeah, there ended up being 40 voices, which I think is biblical and meaningful, though it was not intentionally that. The way that the book came about is, after learning about Dr. George Washington Carver's practice of listening to the earth, and after having my own pandemic-related experiences of tuning in more deeply to my earth listening practice, it became clear that this was something that needed to be uplifted. So I called up one of my elder mentors, as I do when I want to run an idea by. I called up Dr. Claudia Ford. We call her Mama Claudia. She's an ethnobotanist professor at SUNY Potsdam. And I said, do you talk to plants? You know, you still talk to your plants? She said, of course I talk to plants. And so informally interviewed her, and I said, well, who else? Who else is practicing earth listening and ecological humility? So she dropped some names, and then I talked to them, and they dropped some names. And so that sort of my filial web of connection was born. And, you know, for someone who's a science major, who's very spreadsheet and left brain oriented, this was a challenge for me because I didn't know what anybody was going to say. I wasn't trying to force anyone's ideas into a preconceived narrative. I truly wanted to create a tapestry of voices. And so it was only after 40 interviews were complete that I started reading and listening and pulling out themes and trying to figure out like who could go together in a chapter, what would the theme be, and where does a poem need to be, or where does an essay or framing need to be. So it is truly a collage. And I will say that so many ideas emerge, but there are three main sort of like beats in the drumbeat of what is Black Earth Wisdom. And the three ideas include the earth as a sacred text. So the earth as something we read, whether it's the ice cores, the bird song, the night sky, the color of the bark on a redwood, that the earth is speaking to us through these languages that we're obligated to relearn ourselves into. And the second being the earth as kin, as family member. And the third being earth as teacher, someone whom we emulate in her example of generosity, collaboration, and beauty making. With obviously lots of glorious details below those themes. I hope and believe and think that folks will really enjoy the journey of exploring the many facets of the jewel of Black environmental genius, past and present, and some of the most notable, including Rue, some of the most notable Black environmental leaders of today, you know, contributing their part to it.
I just love that we're in each other's books.
I know, isn't that cool?
And it wasn't like planned. It just, yeah, I think you and I were probably having parallel experiences going through the pandemic. And for me, I was recognizing the way that people were, as the animals we are, we were turning to nature for our healing. You know, so I'd spent all these years like trying to sell nature, like, let's get out. It's good for you. You know, like eat your broccoli. It's good for you, right? It felt that way. And then in a snap, people found those connections and they found them close to home and they found them for their healing and they found them for their joy, for their beauty making. And you and I got in conversation together. And I just want to thank you for participating in Nature Swagger. And also, it's truly an honor to be among those whose voices you captured that, you know, are a capsule of experiences that we can pass down and hope that they'll not only not be forgotten, but be applied and connected with for generations to come. So thank you so much for that.
You're welcome, and thank you. Nature Swagger is amazing. For folks who haven't seen it, make sure you get Nature Swagger on your bookshelf. We have it right on our coffee table, so people are always thumbing through because it's such beautiful images that go along with the stories, and I find them uplifting and motivating.
You are listening to Common Ground Radio on WERU Community Radio 89.9 FM. I'm Holly Cederholm, and on today's show, we're talking about Black Earth Wisdom with Leah Penniman and Rue Mapp. The book's introduction describes this anthology of essays and interviews as a conversation between African diasporic people who are carrying on their ancient ancestral practice of listening to the earth to know which way to go.
While we're speaking about both Black Earth Wisdom and Nature Swagger, they both work to deepen the innate connection for Black people in the land by recording and celebrating that intrinsic connection. And y'all just spoke a little bit about your hopes for each of the books out in the world, but I was wondering if you wanted to share more about the power that you hope that they hold in their readers' hands. And Rue, let's start with you.
Sure. For me, I really wanted to have this book be in conversation with the work that I've been doing for over a decade. And a big part of the work was about helping to shift the visual representation of who we imagine gets outside, and importantly, who leads outside. Because growing up, you didn't see people who look like me in the glossy magazines of the day, or when you would see Black people in film depicted in the outdoors. Always trauma, fear, lack of knowledge, lack of courage. I mean, the list goes on. And I knew that that was a lie. That was just, it wasn't my upbringing. It wasn't my truth. And how I was living and connecting with the outdoors. And certainly through the work of Outdoor Afro, I saw so much diverse representation across the United States of how people were meaningfully and with agency connecting with the outdoors. So I wanted the book itself to stand in that place of representation, but also meet people in their literacy as well, because I wanted a six-year-old to pick up a book like Nature Swagger and see people who look like them. Or maybe you're not a voracious reader and you just want to, you know, pick up a quick story or a poem. And so it's designed to really meet people where they are. And even the contributors all came into the book in different ways. Some people, as you probably can relate to, Leah, were interviews. I mean, when you ask people to be a part of a book, like people go, oh my gosh, that's a really big ask. I don't see myself as a writer. And so in the process of inviting people in, it was through diverse modes so that people's voices could shine through, no matter if they thought of themselves as a writer or not. But it was really important to me to have a book that, like Leah, when you tell me it's on your coffee table, that is exactly the point. Like, I wanted to be a conversation starter. I think about growing up always seeing like Ebony and Jet magazines on the coffee table. and how you opened up Jet Magazine, and these are publications that are no longer in paper circulation, but it had something for everybody in the family. It didn't matter if you were into sports, if you were into beauty or business or politics, there was something in there for everybody in the family. And so I really wanted to step into that tradition of having a book that wasn't just for mom and dad or caregivers to enjoy, but for every single person and for people who are not Black, because I realize that people who are not Black are also bereft of the representation. They're missing out on viewpoints and ways of connecting with Black people in ways that haven't been celebrated so much. So those were really important tactics to be able to invite as many listeners and viewers into the book, but also to really uplift so much of what my work has been about.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And the accessibility. Actually, I was told my first book, Farming While Black, in 2018, one of the most beautiful compliments that I got about that book was that it was readable for folks' grandparents who are farmers, elder Black farmers in the South, who do not feel that they can access most farming literature or that it's for them, but that they feel seen and included. So I really appreciate the accessibility piece that you're lifting up. I think for me, you know, in many ways, Farming While Black is the very practical how-to. You know, you can read that book and build a beautiful compost pile, space your carrot seeds just right, run a youth program. And it touches on the why, but Black Earth Wisdom really excavates that like deeper why. Why is it that even in the face of all of the harms and difficulties imposed by settler colonialism and racial capitalism, like why do we get up and keep going? Why do we continue to weave ourselves into a relationship with each other and the earth? So there's more metaphysics, there's more psycho-spirituality in there, there's a little bit more worldview, because it really is my belief that there's no amount of quantifying ecosystem services that's going to get us to the finish line here. Mm-hmm. As long as we have the logic, the false logic, in my opinion, that we're somehow separate from the earth, dominant over the earth, that the earth is here as a resource for us or an environment, that we'll keep finding new ways to cheat our own game of resource conservation, so to speak. And only when we remember ourselves into the web of life that we're part of, we're not outside of or above the rest of nature, are we going to be able to survive. I mean, we have like one generation to get it together. If you were to measure from the bottom of the deepest ocean trenches to the top of the tallest mountain, that's our whole biosphere, that's only 12 miles. And it's 0.3% of the radius of the earth. That's the life raft that we're all sharing, and we're spoiling our nest. And part of continuing to thrive as a species on this planet is going to be figuring out how to share, you know, like going back to kindergarten, just figuring out how to share with one another in all life. So my hope is that Black Earth Wisdom contributes to that ever louder cacophony of voices that's calling for us to once again join the community of kinship here on earth, and also in a similar way to what Rue is lifting up. You know, one of the things that was groundbreaking about Farming While Black was that it put together in one place a whole lot of the contributions of Black agrarians. And up until that point, you know, I read all the literature on Black farming. It was requiems. It was like the Black farmers dying out, or it was about slavery. And there's a whole lot more to our story than the ways that we've been oppressed. There's many thousands of years of noble, dignified contributions to farming that are summarized in Farming While Black. And so Black Earth Wisdom also adds to a much wider existing literature, of course, but that literature that does uplift Black ecological and environmental contributions past and present, and just to keep reminding people, like, we've been here, we're still here. You know, John Muir, and credit to him, of course, and Rachel Carson, they didn't start this. This started way before that. And it started with the communities who've lived closest to the earth for eons and who often have the answers that we need.
I wanted to spend a little more time looking at the legacy of Black land stewardship in terms of the food system and how it relates to organic agriculture specifically. And Leah, in Black Earth Wisdom, you wrote, "A dangerous mythology prevails that Black people's relationship to land is circumscribed by slavery and has no connections to the global organic and regenerative agricultural movements." You also write that, quote, "Part of healing racism in America is to give credit where it's due to Black, Indigenous, and Asian peoples for their contributions to regenerative ways of tending agroecosystems. I'm hoping you can speak to the legacy of agroecological thought and practice that Black communities have contributed to and are contributing. I know that's a big ask.
It's huge, but it's so important, you know, because when I started out as a farmer in the 90s, I would go to these conferences and they were almost all white people. Definitely all the presenters and all the authors were white. And I had a crisis of identity and faith. I'm like, did I choose the wrong team? Am I a traitor to my people? I need to get involved in these other issues, right? And so it was just so important. You know, fortunately, I found Mama Karen Washington. She mentored me, took me under her wing, helped me to not quit. But Farming While Black was the book I needed when I was coming up to know that I was continuing a legacy, not borrowing someone else's culture. So, I mean, if you go back to the continent, so many of the technologies we use as organic farmers have Afro-Indigenous roots. Raised beds come from the Ovambo people of Namibia. Making compost that includes ash or char comes from the African dark earth compost made by women in Kenya and Liberia. The type of terracing systems that we use come from East Africa. They're called Fanyaju in Kenya. The way we rotationally graze our livestock and use their manure to fertilize the next season crops, that comes from the Senegambian region, as does the first transplanting in the history of humankind in the rice paddies of the Senegambian region, right? And then if you cross the ocean and follow our people here to Turtle Island, you know, I already mentioned Dr. George Washington Carver, but he deserves as much uplifting as possible. He is the founder of the modern organic movement. He had folks cover cropping, doing crop rotation, planting legumes, composting and mulching, you know, in the late 1800s, because he saw soil care as so central and he was finding ways to heal after centuries of degradation from monoculture under enslavement of the sugar and the tobacco and other of those cash crops. But even our farm to table movement, we can thank Booker T. Watley for that. Whether you do CSAs or pick your own or any farm to table direct to consumer strategy, he had the economic foresight to see that that was the way that small farmers would be able to make it if they cut out the middle person. Our co-ops, we can thank Fannie Lou Hamer for her contributions to the co-op movement. Our land trust, Charles and Shirley Sherrod, Charles in blessed memory, he just passed away. Not too long ago, but the New Communities was the first community land trust. Our credit unions, our work parties, so much of what we take for granted and often think as ahistorical or European has roots in the Black community. And it's so important to uplift that, both because it's morally right, but also when we're working with young people and they come to the farm, they immediately see the relevance of this work to their own community and history when they can place themselves in a lineage.
Thank you so much, Leah and Rue, for taking the time to talk to me today. It was really an honor to have you join me.
Well, the honor and pleasure was all mine.
Thank you for having us both. This was really a very enlivening, inspiring conversation for me. I learned a lot. Thank you. Yes,
thank you so much.
This has been Common Ground Radio, which airs on the second Thursday of each month at 4 p.m. on WERU Community Radio. Archives of previous episodes can be found on WERU.org as well as the WERU app. Stay tuned for more great programming.